There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that...
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the hour. And tons of text in here as we're looking at the mask ordinance for Mobile that'll be voted on about an hour from now. Mobile City Council meeting 2 days in a row. The parliamentary procedure from yesterday that was going to move the vote to this coming Tuesday had a reverse flea flicker parliamentary procedure that moved the meeting to today so they could vote on that. They have the votes in the council, mayor's behind it, and looks like a mask ordinance is coming our way. We talked about that in detail in the last hour. And I know I see your text, all the questions about you know, Americans with Disabilities Act and OSHA and face masks. I worry about a situation here where an ordinance that would be passed, which is a messaging ordinance, right? It's to tell people, y'all act right, is going to be put in the laps of law enforcement, and do they have the resources, and do they even want to enforce this? I mean, that's a question you got to ask if you pass a law on that. Actually, I want to ask this question of our buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, because Montgomery's ordinance has been in effect for, what, a couple weeks now, Todd?
Yeah, at least a week and a half. I think it went into effect, about a week and a half ago. And you're right. I mean, it was more about, you know, sending the message that, hey, we have to wear masks, please wear a mask. But it isn't, I mean, technically it is enforceable. I think it's a $25 fine if they catch you without a mask. And, you know, many times, because I've had those kind of questions too about, well, what about this circumstance or in that circumstance? I really think this is less about, you know, special circumstances that might pop up, and really more about obvious situations as far as the enforcement goes. I mean, you know, I was right as the mask ordinance was going into effect the other day, I was at a gas station where nobody was wearing a mask, including the clerks, and it was just full of people. I just decided not to go in there. That is an obvious situation where law enforcement could intervene and say, hey, if you'll put on some masks here, I'm going to write you a ticket. These, you know, there, of course, there are a million situations where you could think of where it would not be appropriate. And but I think you're right. It's about sending a message. It's the right thing to do to put on a mask when you go in public.
Yeah, but okay, sending a message and moving forward with an ordinance, I think, are different things. I think you, what has gotten us to this point, and on so many fronts, but let's talk specifically on this, is lack of faith of information, right? The mask thing has definitely become a political thing. It's virtue signaling either way, whether somebody's masked up or not, in a lot of cases, not all. At the same time, you have this opinion, you know, about wearing a mask. And I'm not talking about the, you know, the Fauci said, well, yeah, Fauci said, and it's come out now that they were basically lying to the American people to make sure they had enough masks for frontline healthcare workers. But since then, you've even had like WHO that, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago came out and said, you know, unless you have an active case of COVID, you don't need to wear a mask. And then that went on for 2 days, and they kind of crawfished back from that. And remember, then they had the thing that said, well, you're only... If you don't, you only have a very small, if you're not actively in the case of COVID, you have a super very small, I don't know the term they used, a chance of passing that on to somebody else. And then that story comes out. Then another story comes out. Then it's back to we have to have masks. And then they see, you know, if they're watching television coverage, the anchors on a liberal network, if they're doing a stand-up somewhere, they have their mask on. The ones on a conservative don't. The president doesn't, but Fauci does. I mean, you get the confusion. People feel like, hey, I'm being told that there's something here that I don't have confidence in, and am I going to surrender my liberties for something that may not be true?
Well, maybe so. I mean, you must be watching a lot more news than I am. And look, I guess if you wanted to comb through all the different statements, you're right about the CDC, or really it was the Surgeon General back then, too, saying, hey, don't go out and buy masks. But I remember distinctly it came over, I guess it was about April, mid-April, when things really started getting serious. They said, wear masks. And to me, it was pretty simple. Like, okay, well, let's wear a mask when we're in public. I started doing it back then. I really don't get the aversion to it. If you don't want to, I understand not wanting to, but I don't understand... my rights are being compromised or something like that. I mean, if you don't want to go into a store, you don't have to, but it's for the benefit of everybody else to, we don't know if we have the virus before, we're contagious. And so, that's the whole thing behind masks. And look, I don't think, is it a messaging ordinance? Probably, but it is enforceable. And I'll just tell you that here in Montgomery, until they got serious, until the city council and mayor started talking about it, the behavior in town really didn't change, and so it did after that. I don't know how many tickets have been written. We're going to probably look into that, if any or all, have been written. But I do know that it changed the behavior, and that's probably a good thing. You got to remember, Sean, things are trending the bad way.
Right.
Things are not going well in the state, not just in Alabama, but in most states. We did better through the month of May, but here we are, and it's trending back up. So, it's a pretty common sense thing to do. And to me, it's been simple. I've been wearing one since April.
Okay. So on the flip side of this, if the situation that you laid out, it's getting worse, and the numbers show we have a spike. The fatality numbers are not the issue. It's just the total number of new cases, it looks like, in the comparison. Obviously, the fatality issue is, 100% for that person, but what I'm saying is the trend has been, diminishing of the number of fatal cases, but an increase in number of cases, and we can argue whether that's all testing or a mix of testing and actual increase of cases. But if that's true, here, watch this pivot. Watch this. Then why did Governor Ivey not go? Why did she just continue with the safer at home amended order and not go to back to the stay at home?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, she's been criticized, right, by a lot of folks on Twitter and just people that wanted her to go and back to the stay home orders, the very strict orders that closed a lot of businesses. And she said she wasn't going to do it. She said, look, it's all about personal responsibility now. And I mean, I thought that was really interesting.
But what was it back in March, right? I mean, wasn't it about personal responsibility back in March when everybody had to stay at home?
Yeah, Sean, I think it's always been about that. I mean, Alabama was, I don't know of a state that did not go with a strict stay home order back then. They were pretty much instructed to by the federal government, by the White House. And so, it wasn't just Alabama. Every state went to these strict stay-home orders. But it's clear that had a drastic impact on our economy. She's talked about that a little bit. She said she regrets the whole essential versus non-essential thing.
Mm-hmm.
We can't undo all of that. But, it's interesting to me that, even in this spike, we're not going back to that. She's not going to go and shutter a bunch of businesses again. I think it's very telling of just how bad that economic impact was. Another side of that coin is, it's not just the economic impact. It overwhelmed the state agencies, right? The unemployment agency, the Department of Labor, they were completely overwhelmed with, requests. And so they don't want to go back to that. I think it's always been about personal responsibility. Even during the stay-home orders. Even during the strict stay-home orders, you still had, you know, people getting out and doing irresponsible things. So it's, we're never going to beat this thing unless we take responsibility for ourselves and for our families, and, you know, it's not foolproof. Mistakes can get made. Things can spread. That's why we're in this mess. But there are ways you can use common sense to protect yourself.
But at the same time, this thing, you talk about the COVID-19, the virus, and its effects, but you have a bunch of people, it's not just here in Alabama, but you have a bunch of people that say, what thing are you talking about? This isn't a thing. This is no worse than a flu. This is, you know, this is just something that they're using this as the latest way to take away a liberty. This is not, and this is not a big deal. They're overblowing this. They're tweaking the numbers there when they give us the death report. They're, you know, if you go in and you have any other comorbidity and you die of that, but it's still qualified as coronavirus.
Well, I don't know. I guess I'm not qualified to answer that kind of question. I know Scott Harris personally. He's, you know, the state health officer. He's a good guy. He's a medical doc. He's a pathologist. And this is what he does, is infectious diseases. And he is completely overwhelmed. He's completely tired, and because he sees an outbreak that is really hard to handle, that is really infectious. And even as we have, you know, the whole, we've turned the world on its end to try to stop this thing, it still is spreading. So that's, I mean, I don't want to offend anybody, but that's absolute nonsense. And if you've got to reach that far, if you got to reach that far and get that political about an issue like this, then I mean, I don't know.
But it's been made political, right? It has been made political. You'd be Pollyanna to say, say it's not.
Everything gets made. Yeah, of course, everything gets made political. If you know, I mean.
Which is what got my attention. That's what I was saying this morning. This is why I think it's worth a further dig, that now you have Texas Governor Abbott, Republican Governor DeSantis. You have Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, who a month and a half ago said, you know, people should be wearing masks, but I am not for an ordinance enforcing it. He's now behind the ordinance here. So you have a lot of people that were not your normal players on calling for more shutdown and more, you know, for an ordinance. Now these people are doing that. So that's why I think it bears out a little further discussion. And I asked this morning. I don't have an answer to it. Did they get some tranche of information that the rest of us didn't get that made them, or did they look at something differently and go, okay, here it comes. We got to do this now. Because those are Republicans doing it. They're, you know, I mean.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been reporting for the last couple of weeks. You know, it's Texas, Florida, Arizona. Alabama's up there. We're not quite as bad as some of those states, but every one of them has seen spikes in cases. And it's, you know, I take your point about the deadliness. Alabama's not quite at 1,000 deaths. And so if you think about that, you know, compared to other things, is that so bad? Well, maybe not as you compare it to other things, but I mean, yeah, we have a ton of cases that are going out. It's being transmitted. And what Dr. Harris said the other day about testing is that, yeah, there have been more tests. But that doesn't explain the major spike, because they're seeing more positive tests in their testing. So he answered that question straight on. Look, everything gets made political, but we have a choice to make personally whether or not we make things political. The news, you know, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, they're in the business of making you hate things and shout at the TV and think, oh God, this is horrible. And of course, coronavirus becomes, you know, a part of that. And there are plenty of reasons to think government leaders have been inconsistent or ineffective and all of the above when it comes to this virus. But common sense is common sense. If you don't think an ordinance is the right way to go, fine. Tell them that. If you think, you know, the government has made certain missteps along the way, absolutely speak your mind. But I think getting into conspiracies about, you know, Hillary Clinton developed this virus with the trilateral. Well,
there's some of this stuff. That's the problem, though. And we'll run to the break and come back more with Todd Stacey. Because, I mean, yes, there's. You can take extreme examples of ridiculousness, and I agree with you, Todd. You know, those people say, and it was engineered here, and it was designed to do this, and I get you. But at the same time, does that equal somebody who says, Is it really necessary for me to be required to wear this mask by my municipal government? All right, coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 125 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We'll get him to give you the way to sign up for that email to have it in your inbox every, 6 days a week and every weekday morning. Todd, how do they do that?
Oh, it's really easy, and now's a great time with the election coming up. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. But you'll want to sign up for the email. It's free, no cost at all. Just go to subscribe at the top of the page, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list.
All right, and like you said, it wouldn't be on the list all the time, but for a second here, I know that mask or not to mask and those things are driving a lot of our conversation, but we do happen to have, a couple of primary runoffs of note here in the state, and especially down in our neck of the woods, too, with this AL1 Republican primary that is, the gloves have long since been off, and maybe they've picked up knives at this point.
Yeah, it looks like it, and all three primaries, really. I'm really intrigued by the first district because it's been a pretty close race this entire time, but you've got kind of some battle lines being drawn. You've got Club for Growth, what we've talked about a lot. They are advertising like crazy. They've gone all in on Bill Hightower. On the other side with Jerry Carl, you've got a lot of business groups that have lined up. The Business Council of Alabama, today the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we broke that story, is behind Carl. So is the Alabama Farmers Federation. So some of these business and farmer type groups are behind. So, and these battle lines aren't rare. A lot of times there's an open seat. It'll come down to sort of the activist wing of the party versus the business end of the party. That's pretty likely and pretty common. But this time it's a lot higher stakes because of all the money that's been spent. I mean, Club for Growth itself is probably going to total over $1 million in spending all told. That's a lot.
Does that surprise? I mean, you're savvy in these things. It surprises me, but I'm a little more on the hayseed side than you. Does that surprise you?
Absolutely. Okay. That's a lot of money. I mean, that is just a ton of money to come into. Remember, that's not the candidates. That's just one group in one race, and there are hundreds of races around the country where they might want to play. Over in the second district, they're not spending quite as much, but at least $400,000 or $500,000. So they are serious about winning these two seats. It would be a really big deal if Club were able to come in and kind of pick off two congressional seats, because you got to remember Bradley Byrne and Martha Roby, who have been in office for a while. They are they're some of your more business and farmer friendly members of Congress that you'll find anywhere, as far as supporting the farmers' agenda, supporting the business agenda, they're at the top of the list. So if Club were to come in here and be able to, in the Freedom Caucus, and pick off two seats, that'd be a big deal for them, but also a big loss for the business community and all that. So I'm really intrigued by it. I think Carl at this point, is in the driver's seat. All the polling I've seen shows that he's in the driver's seat, but you never know. And with all that money being spent, it's probably going to be a pretty close race.
Hey, before we wrap up, too, I want to talk real quickly about Sessions in Tuberville and where you see those numbers. I hadn't seen, what was the last poll? Are we a week ago?
Yeah, well, there were two. The last one was a Sessions internal that had him down 6. Before that, he was down 23. So that's a pretty
so big
I've
swing.
Not seen any. Yeah. Well, I've not seen numbers that I'm able to publish, but I'll just tell you this.
In the
numbers I've seen, it's been exactly like that. It's been like either really close or really far apart. Tuberville's leading in everything. So I think the problem you're running into in polling here is trying to determine what a likely voter is. We have no idea what this electorate's going to look like. We have no idea who's showing up to the polls, 2 weeks from now. During a pandemic, all right, you get the pandemic going on. You've got, a mask ordinance maybe going on. You've got, it's been, 3 months since the original primary, or going to be 4 months since the original primary. That's all those factors just add up to not knowing who in the world is going to be voting in this thing. I think a diminished turnout, which we know it's going to be diminished, we don't know how diminished, I think a low turnout tends to help Sessions, and that's the conventional wisdom there politically. But again, we don't know who's showing up. I do think this, and I know I've talked too long, the campaign that has the ability to sign up absentee voters and bank those votes, I think will be rewarded on Election Day. That's a sophisticated program, but if you can contact voters that support you and effectively get them registered absentee and get their votes in the mail, man, that gives you a huge advantage on Election Day.
There he is, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Have a fantastic Independence Day weekend, and we'll check back with you next week.
All right, Sean, y'all be good.
Will do. All right, coming right back, your phone calls at 343-0106, plus those fireworks stats.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, Dalton, have I mentioned to you that my favorite, Southern Fairways, I mean, enjoying the golf talk, enjoying my friend Randy and Danny, it's the unexpected giggles that put me over the top of that show. That's when my when the giggles are unexpected, that's my favorite part about that. All right, phone number is 343-0106, 343-0106. I will, before we finish, make it a promise. This fireworks ranker, I know we have a lot more pressing things to go on out there, but sometimes just after, I think I'm pushing 28 years in the business, 29, I'm going to use the bully pulpit to my benefit, and I'm interested in this story that ranks the states that buy the most fireworks, all right? Because I feel like I'm part of these numbers. All right, and a lot of text as well here. We'll get to those. I want to get the phones first. You get priority service when you go to the phones at 343-0106. Joe is in Wilmer and up first. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, man. Thanks for calling. So what's up?
On this absentee ballot, right, so it may not be as big a deal with our elections around here, but I just wanted your opinion on the presidential election with all this mail-in ballot stuff that they're trying to push. Shouldn't the government have an easier way to keep track of registered voters? Because, I mean, for example, I bought a used truck out of state. It's been through two owners, been through two states. Ford still found me to give me a recall. So
that's right.
Shouldn't it be an easy process to, once a voter puts their ballot in, whether it's mailed at the poll or wherever.
Well, okay, so here's
that person is subtracted off the list.
Okay, so here's the rub. So, and I think you're right, there's a way to do it, but I know that, and Dalton, we'll have to put those interviews back up. I've had a couple interviews with Dr. Alec Yasinsack from the University of South Alabama that did some studying, a lot of studying into absentee ballots, and this is stuff, y'all, that he put out 10 years ago, so it's not, I mean, it was done not for any kind of political expediency. It was something that he saw. And he said one of the troubles they have is it's not a two-way street communication. For example, if you screw up or send a ballot in, or they can't tell you that they got your ballot or didn't get your ballot because, it's anonymous, right? So there's no way for them to really... Now, on voter rolls, they can do that. But once you send the ballot, they can't contact you or track you on it. That's one of the rubs there. So... if you get two ballots, I guess, okay, let's figure this out. If two people send a ballot and absentee for the same person, they could, yeah, I don't think they can turn around and do anything about it. They would have to not send you the ballot in the first place. And as we've heard, that can happen. So I don't,
it just seems like there should be
I'm with you.
I mean, a database, you know, that, you know, It should be a real simple process to eliminate people that's already voted, and that whole system should automatically know that this person has deceased or whatever, and that Social Security number, that registered voter, no longer exists for, you know, all of the, what they keep claiming, you know, fake, mm-hmm. you know, fake ballots and stuff like that. And it just seems like a whole big debacle, you know, in a country that's well above many other countries. We should have a protocol. You would think Google or somebody like that could come up with a very simple process to vote from home or whatever, and it just minuses the people off the list every time a vote comes in, and it should be cut and dry, simple and easy peasy. You might not like the outcome, but it was 100% accurate.
Very good. And I agree. I just don't have an answer for you how it's going to work yet, but I agree with you. I appreciate the call. I think part of it, if I remember back to conversations I've had over time with secretaries of state or like Dr. Gassensack and others, is that states are pretty protective of their proprietary voting portion, right? That they don't, I don't think they share very much. And you could say that's a good thing too, but that may be one of the reasons for the, you know, not getting people off the rolls. I'm saying state to state. Within a state and moving within a state, there's no excuse, but state to state, it may be because they don't, there's probably a very good reason they don't want to communicate with each other or share that information. I'll think of it in a second. All right. maybe it doesn't exist. My man Buck in Hurley up next. Hey, Buck.
Hey, afternoon. I just want to pitch a thought to you. Things in our country are so upside down right now, you have to wear a mask to get inside the bank.
Yeah. This is something I said this morning, Buck. Think about if, okay, you and I are going to hop in the time machine. Here we go. And we're going to go back to 2019. And you and I are going to say, y'all go home to the wife and say, they wouldn't let me in the bank today without a mask on.
Yeah.
That's where we are.
What?
They would not. They told me if I didn't wear a mask, they wouldn't let me in the bank. I mean, it's strange, man. It's strange.
So can I reply to Joe there for a second?
Sure.
So, Joe, if the Democrats are pushing it as hard as they are, I wouldn't trust it. I don't trust the government in general, but there are ways that you can be more proficient in voting and not necessarily be in a particular area. You can use face recognition, but how many people are willing to give up that right for the government to have that technology when it's there and they're using it in China to track you? There was a criminal that was wanted in China, and they tracked him when he entered a sports arena by his face, and they went exactly to the seat he was sitting in and arrested him.
Yeah, I remember this story, and there's several, and it's a pretty, well, I don't know, widespread. I don't know. It's something that is used more than once in China. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Well, that's the thing, though, on the thing about your privacy, and that's, I really want y'all to go back. If you'll go to fmtalk1065.com, click podcast, and look for Dr. Alec Yassensack. Have two different interviews with him. He's with the University of South Alabama. He's done the studies into all the pitfalls with absentee voting. And it wasn't just, it's not just political and malfeasance. It's just stuff getting lost and not done correctly. But he points out, he said, Sean, the problem is you can't, if somebody does a ballot incorrectly or they have any question, because of the nature of it being anonymous when it's sent in, you don't know if it was registered and counted or not counted or anything, because they can't tell you. Once it's in, to keep the anonymous voting, it's a one-way street, so you never know if it actually got counted.
There are really good instances of where absentee ballots come into play, and that would say if you're at an APO in Europe, or if you're in the theater in Afghanistan or Iraq, of course you still should have that right to vote. And that's a valid way to do it. But here in America, you should be able to go down the street and vote in person in a safe manner. You can go to the convenience store or Walmart and purchase things in a safe manner via a screen.
I guess, I mean, how would you, okay, yeah, we're going to make you President Buck for the day. How are we make you head of the FEC, Federal Elections Commission? How do you do this?
Well, first of all, you need an ID. You show up with a valid government-issued ID. You vote. I scratch your name off of a list as you voted.
Okay.
That way you, because dead people aren't coming up with a valid ID and voting in person with a picture ID.
Right. So that's the only way.
Yeah. I mean, there's churches and political groups that if you're handicapped or you're sick, they will assist you in getting to a polling place to vote.
So in this situation here where we have all the abs, and we have the Secretary of State, a Republican here, but hopefully somebody who would just do his job as Secretary, he's letting people know how easy it is to do an absentee ballot because of health concerns.
There's ways to get around that. There, you can still go out into public right now. Obviously, you wear a face covering. We've got plenty of hand sanitizer. I mean, we have cases of it here at work with alcohol, 70%. You make sure that your hands are clean. You go in with a government ID. You're in to protect the polling workers themselves. You can't breathe or cough on them. You go in, you vote with your clean hands and your face covering, and you leave.
Here we go. Now, Buck, I appreciate it. I'm what I'm doing right here is searching for that podcast. But by the way, if you can go, and thanks for the call as always, man, and good to hear from you. Have a great Independence Day weekend. The podcast is, you can go to, well, we'll pull it back up. It's, if you go to fmtalk1065.com and click podcast link and look for Dr. Alec Yasinsack, these interviews, I did one of them just maybe a month and something ago, and one maybe 2.5 months ago. And he's really done the research into this and the pitfalls, and he backs it up, and this is something that came out, and I mean 10-12 years ago, so it doesn't even, you know, if anybody says, oh well, that's, they're doing that because they're trying to protect President Trump, no, the man did the research, he's a he's an educator, and put this stuff out, and it's really a great interview. I'm trying to get this, if y'all don't find it, I'll get it put back up and we'll post it somewhere where you can get to it a little more easily. All right, let's we're up against the, okay, take one more here and we can run the break. Bob is in Orange Beach up next. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing? Listen, I caught both of those broadcasts with that doctor.
Oh, you did? Okay.
They were real fascinating, and you were good with hanging in there with him. But my quick thing I wanted to report was I had one of my friends that's a veteran from California who posted 5 different absentee ballots sent to his address because 5 different people had lived there in the past.
Wow.
He said, am I going to rack it up for Trump? I don't know if he did it or not, but I mean, he showed the picture of 5 different ballots and 5 different names on it. One of them included his.
I mean, and how many places is that happening? I don't know. I don't know how many places this happens, but in your friend's place it did.
Yeah, they have that automatic absentee ballot and ballot harvesting out there. I just, I like our Alabama laws. I show up, I show my ID, I get the vote. When my brother passed away, I made sure that his name was off the voting rolls. When my mother passed away, I did the same thing. One person, one vote. Keep it straight.
Well, it should be, Bob. I appreciate your call. And yeah, that's the, I'm glad to hear that too, because people would say, oh, well, if I could, you know, ballot harvest and do it for Trump, I would do it. I can't. No, not on your side there. Sorry. Do it right.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
I do have to get to those fireworks stats, okay? That story is fascinating to me. Get that in just a second. All right, this is FM Talk 106.5. It's Midday Mobile. I want y'all to say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And Angelo, talk to us about y'all's hours with the upcoming Independence Day weekend.
Yeah, the first we've ever done this, we're actually going to be open on Independence Day. With all the craziness that's been going on out there the last several weeks, we've been really busy on Saturdays. A lot of people have been very happy about that because they're so busy, so stressed during the week. The only time they can get out and about is on Saturdays. So this Saturday, rather than being closed for Independence Day, we're going to actually have some Independence Day specials and sales, And we will be open from 9 o'clock to 2 o'clock this Saturday.
All right. And when they come in, they can talk precious metals, but they can also check out the gift items aplenty.
Lots of stuff. Everything from our favorite, the Opinel knives, to the gold and silver bullion. About 5,000 or 6,000 pieces of jewelry in stock right now. So I promise you, you will find something cool. And you can still get out in time to go do some barbecue and shoot off some fireworks.
I love it. Give people directions to come find you.
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com. And if you want to sort of preview stuff, go on to Facebook or Instagram and check out some of the items there.
All right, that's a deal. Thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo, check it in from Mobile Bay Coins and find jewelry. All right, yes, we're going to go back to the text and phones, but this is the story. So this is a ranker story, right? You've seen these where they... the state that has the most whatever, eats the most donuts, whatever, drinks the most beer. This is now getting into something that I can get down with. This is the states that use the most fireworks, okay? So it said here's how they did it. From firecracker injuries, and they're all called fireworks. Firecracker, by the way, people at Zipia.com, is something specific. But it says from firecracker injuries, there were 9,100 in 2018 alone, which I think that number goes up because more people are going to DIY their fireworks for 4th of July. Said last year alone, it cost the United States roughly $319 million to import fireworks. Now, here we go. China produces 90% of the fireworks that are made worldwide. So that's good. I need some labeling for some American-made fireworks, because I imagine now with that stat, I have been guilty of giving money to the Chinese over the decades. So they did the ranker, and they said the states that use the most fireworks, they said the dollar amount of fireworks imports that came from U.S. trade census, of course, more people often equals more fireworks. So they determined the states with a disproportionately high amount of fireworks use. In other words, they're doing it per capita versus overall fireworks. So per capita, the list goes this way. Number one state in the union for fireworks use. Anybody, if y'all made your bets yet? Missouri. Comes in at number one. Missouri comes in with a bang as the state that shoots off the most fireworks in the U.S. The state imports more than 42 million fireworks each, which means there's enough fireworks for each person in Missouri to shoot off roughly 7 different fireworks. All right, good. Heading west here at Nebraska, said while the number of fireworks imported into Nebraska isn't as impressive as Missouri, it's still not bad because they import enough fireworks that each person in Nebraska could shoot off 6 fireworks each. So this is the breakdown per cap. All right. There's a cluster going here, right? So you had Missouri, then we went up to the northwest. We had Nebraska. Now back to south of Nebraska, Kansas, number 3. So Kansas, they said, imports 12 million fireworks each year. That's enough for each resident of Kansas to shoot off 4 fireworks each. It seems kind of low, though. I mean, I guess there's big blocks of people that are just no fun and don't shoot off the fireworks. And number 4 on the list, y'all, here we go. So we had a cluster of bordering states, right? Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska up there. Then it travels, so far to the southeast. And number 4 on the list, that's us. Alabama imports 20 million fireworks a year for for the people here in the state. It's enough for us to shoot off 4 point something each. So 4th, just behind this crazy cluster that goes on there in the Midwest, the Missouri, Nebraska, Kansas triad there. Right after that, Alabama comes in at number 4. Number 5, South Carolina. South Carolina imports 19 million fireworks a year. Then we're back up to the west. These are all great states, man. These are cool places. We're on a trend here. People that like fireworks, these are good states. South Carolina at number 5. Number 6, Wyoming. Now, see, I think Wyoming has the smallest population. Doesn't it have the smallest? Of any contiguous state. It may be less than Alaska, but I think it's for sure any contiguous state. It says Wyoming is at number 6. They import 1.8 million fireworks, but because there's so few residents, it comes up to 3.2 fireworks per citizen in Wyoming. Nevada coming in at number seven on the list. 7.5 million fireworks imported each year, but because of the small population, comes up to 2.6 fireworks per citizen. North Dakota comes in next at number eight on the list. North Dakota, 2.5 fireworks per citizen. Indiana comes in at number nine. It is, 2.5 fireworks per citizen. And Ohio rounds out the top 10 at 2.3 fireworks per citizen. So there you go, top 10 fireworks states. I mean, do you notice what I noticed? You have South Carolina. But in the Southeast, other than South Carolina, there's no... Where's Texas? You think no Texas in the top 10. There's no Louisiana in the top 10, no Mississippi, no Tennessee, no Georgia, no Florida, no North Carolina. No, it's Alabama and South Carolina in the top 10. Everybody else is either in the Midwest or West, or I guess you got the cluster there, Indiana and Ohio in the upper Eastern Midwest. All right, so there you go. There's your rankings. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. And remember, stay online at fmtalk1065.com. You can stream the station there. You can get podcasts like that interview I was just talking about. Take part in the online opinion poll questions, show schedules, all that good stuff's there. And even more and more better over on Facebook, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. Make sure you like our page, whether you're putting pictures up in the fish and photo contest or checking out who's going to have fireworks, who's not in that list, or any other great items that are up at our Facebook page. Go check it out right now. Got a little time? Go to facebook.com/fmtalk1065. All right. Hang on. I'm out to go procure fireworks. I'm trying to get Alabama from four to number one this next year in the fireworks stats.